south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, as this show goes out on Sunday, January 7th, I'm right in the middle of my Expat Insider Seminar. Yeah, I always record my shows a couple days in advance, so I can ship them off to New York in time for the mothership to put them on the schedule. And being that I'm knee-deep in my seminar right now, and it lasts for around a week, just a little heads up that there won't be two new Expat File shows coming after this one, but two repeat best-ofs. I mean, I've got 725 shows now, so I'm sure there's a best-of in there somewhere. Which also infers there's a worst-of, or a lot of worst-ofs in there, too. Should I have admitted that? So just to repeat, this week there'll be two shows, but there'll be repeats. We'll let studio engineers decide which ones they are. Anyway, the next brand new show will be Friday, January 19th, the following week. All right, thought we'd start out the show with some good news. Turns out, five Mexican politicians were killed in 1 week. And that means there's only 15,222 to go. Hey, I'm serious. Five were killed in 1 week. You know what they call that, don't you? A good start. I know what some of you are thinking. Not every single politician is a dirty, lard-ass, thieving piece of crap. Well, I beg to differ. Nice that there are a few of you optimists out there, but I don't think so. Which reminds me of a bumper sticker I saw not too long ago. It was on a car, of course, here in Latin America that was shipped out from the States. The bumper sticker, of course, was in English, and everyone down here speaks Spanish, at least 99.9% of them, because I'm off the gringo tourist trail. Which begs the question, why don't they just peel it off? I mean, if they don't understand what it says, it's in English, why keep it on? Not only that, they leave the U.S. dealership decal or metal plate on there too, which means absolutely nothing to the average Latin American. So why don't they just peel that off? You know, start fresh with an unblemished, un-bumper-stickered car. I think some of you know why. It's because everything in English has a cool kind of cachet down here. Even bumper stickers, t-shirts, and logos that are absolutely indecipherable for anyone who doesn't speak English. That's the same reason why t-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, and anything from the States with any kind of English lettering on it are so damn popular here in Latin America. In fact, even though most of that stuff's printed right here in Latin America or in China and shipped right back to the States for sale, no matter if it's got English words or English lettering of any kind, or any figure or symbol that's recognizable as something from up in the States, like the New York or Chicago skyline, a rock band, the Golden Gate Bridge, Statue of Liberty, Mount Rushmore, my jammy beach, or anything Mickey Mouse or Disney. Man, Latins are just in love with that kind of stuff. They eat it right up. It's just amazing. Even when you turn on one of the copycat morning TV shows, you see bad Latin copies of Good Morning America-style shows in every big Latin market. Or I should say, all over the airwaves, there are bad Latin copies of bad U.S. shows. It never fails. The hosts or presentadoras or presentadores, that would be the presenters, are forever showing up with t-shirts, sweaters, hats, etc., with English letters and sayings on them. And it never fails that once in a while they'll throw in an English slang word, too. And I'm thinking, and you would too, what's that all about when the entire watching or listening audience speaks Spanish and almost zero English? I have to admit there have been times when I've been sitting in the living room of a Latin person's house, just bored to death with what's on the TV and the conversation too, and I have asked that question, why are the presenters wearing hats, t-shirts, sweaters, whatever, with English letters and sayings on them? And what's with the sprinkling of English words like okay, fantastic, cool, and awesome? Those aren't to be found in the Spanish language. In almost all cases, the answers I get from the Latinos I'm sitting with is, well, they're just showing off, trying to impress everyone with their knowledge of los estados, the states. So that's what the upper classes, wealthy classes, and wannabes do. They sprinkle their vernacular with common, sometimes pretty outdated, gringo slang words. And man, there's nowhere in Latin America you hear more of that stuff than on Latin American college campuses. And that's where you'll see the most first world copycat fashions, too. So everyone, and I mean everyone, from the richest to the poorest, have clothes in their wardrobe, no matter how big or small, with English language sayings on. It's the ultimate sign of gringo wannabeism. And it's funny, Latinos, especially young Latinos and Latinas, are terrifically proud of all the clothes they have with English letters and sayings on them. And again, I repeat, unless the words are one syllable or extremely simple, they have no idea of their meaning. You'd think they'd try Google Translate, huh? But even though most have smart or somewhat smartphones, they don't even know there's Google Translate there to help them. That's why sometimes gringos and expats will do double takes, thinking, I wouldn't wear that, nor would I let my kid walk out of the house with that on. Just too offensive. Because we read those things, and occasionally we'll see a really crude, gross, or outlandish saying. We're seeing a lot of t-shirts these days sprinkled with four-letter words, you know. Stuff that would definitely make your mom or grandma wince. In fact, a few times I've taken some gringos through some Spanish cathedrals around Christmas time, and a lot of people are coming in and out. And man, I saw a couple of adolescent girls with English phrases on their t-shirts that would have got them kicked out in a second if it had happened up in the States. So let me ask you this. If you had a t-shirt, sweater, or hat with a foreign language saying on it, wouldn't you want to know exactly what it said before you wore it out in public? I think so. Meanwhile, up in the States, of course, everyone has t-shirts, sweaters, and hats with English sayings on them. Cutesy stuff, clever stuff, semi-vulgar stuff for the younger set. Sayings we all understand, of course. It's our native language, so we mix and match accordingly, depending on the occasion. Not so, however, with the locals here in Latin America. The odd thing is, and you don't really want to bring this up at a party because it's ego-deflating, not to you, but to the Latino you're speaking to, the guy who doesn't even know his t-shirt is totally offensive or inappropriate for the occasion. Even so, probably no one else at the party gets it except you, the gringo. Just know you see that all the time, and the guy wearing the offensive t-shirt's totally in love with it. He thinks he's cool, and he shines even more, in his own mind that is, when he sees that you, a gringo, noticed it. So you may be cringing inside, but why dissuade him from his fantasy? Which reminds me, all those years I lived in Chicago, I never once saw a t-shirt, hat, or a sweater with a Spanish language saying on it, except maybe Joe's Taco Palace or Garcia Plumbing. But back to the subject of lard-ass thieving politicians everywhere. For you optimists out there who think there are some good ones, I offer up this bumper sticker I saw not so long ago. It said, "Thou shalt not steal. The government hates competition." God, and to think it took me 7.5 minutes to get to that punchline. By the way, many times I've walked up to a Latino who had a cool English saying on his t-shirt or sweater or whatever, and I'd compliment him, saying something like, "I like the shirt. Do you know what it means?" And I'll tell you, they're all happy and smiling and glad a gringo came up to them and said such a thing. But they never seem to know what it really means, especially if it's a clever saying. Now, that's not to say Latinos don't have various items of clothing with Spanish words and sayings on them. That's pretty common, too, especially when it comes to soccer paraphernalia. I see that everywhere. But I'll tell you, expat Eddie has tested the real value of those things versus the value of a t-shirt with an English saying on it. In fact, one time we were in a beach bar, and we were having pretty much the same Latin t-shirt versus English t-shirt discussion. And he made a bet with me that he could trade t-shirts, his grungy old weather-worn Led Zeppelin t-shirt, for any t-shirt in the place that had Spanish letters on it. That is, any t-shirt a guy was wearing. So I pointed to a guy nearby, and sure enough, he made the trade. He said it was so easy, he probably could have squeezed a few bucks out of him, too. In fact, a long time ago, before Eddie got tied down with the restaurant biz, I saw him pull that little game with an adolescent kid who was shining his shoes. And you know, all this talk says a lot about the Latino society, doesn't it? You may think I'm picking on him here, making fun of him and all that, but the truth is that the bigger reality is that you read articles and you hear people say gringos are disliked throughout the world. Well, that seems to be the case in Europe, and it's definitely the case in the Middle East, where they actually get points for killing us. But in Latin America, it's just the opposite. Although it's true and you can't deny, there are ugly Americans all over the world. Not to mention the ridiculously heavy hand of our government and military. And what's the count now? 230 different foreign military bases? Man, if there's any country that needs a comeuppance, it's the U.S., and it's coming. They just can't mind their own friggin' business. They want their fingers in everyone else's pie. But still, in Latin America and in certain parts of Asia, your gringo advantage is alive and well. Speaking of the gringo advantage, maybe some would call it a disadvantage. You know, everyone in the States has someone in the family who's got an artificial joint or prosthesis. Wow, where'd that come from? Talk about slamming on the brakes and changing the subject, huh? In fact, my mother, who's in her mid-80s now, she belongs to what I call the Widows Club. A bunch of nice old ladies whose husbands have croaked a long time ago. Yeah, you know, the Greatest Generation guys? Most of them didn't make it too much past 70, and their wives are in their 80s and 90s now. There's got to be 10 or maybe even 100,000 little clubs like that throughout the United States. Old, widowed ladies, finally living the good life on their husbands' pensions and insurance money. Hey, nothing wrong with that. That's what insurance and pensions are for, right? Anyway, my mom's in this group of around 10 old, widowed ladies, and between them, she told me they've got 19 titanium replacement parts. You know, knees, hips, and all that. And we're not even talking about stuff like pacemakers, cataracts, cochlear implants, insulin pumps, and titanium rods for back injuries and dental implants. So what's that got to do with Latin America and the fact that almost no Latin people I've ever met have any of those things? Yep, even those 80 and 90-year-old guys out there chopping the weeds with their machetes are still operating on original parts. Well, according to statistics, in the U.S., 4.5 million people over the age of 50 have artificial knee replacements. And over 1 million U.S. citizens receive some type of artificial joint replacement each year, more often the knees and the hips. Now, for these people, getting through airport security, and this is the point, with their dignity intact can be next to impossible, largely because of TSA's current policy of performing enhanced pat-downs on anyone who sets off a metal detector. So it doesn't matter if you're 90 or even 100 years old, if you're like my mom or anyone in her widow's club, the TSA is going to feel you up. Now, in any other situation, you might call that physical assault or even sexual assault. Now, that said, I wouldn't want to be the TSA agent that pats down my dear old mom. She's a tough old German and can be pretty cantankerous. She's not going to let anybody lay their fingers on her, not without a fight. And I know as people get older and their bodies start failing, they tend to get a bit more cantankerous and short-tempered. And you know, it would serve those TSA jerks right if once in a while they got a poke in the ribs or the eye from Granny's cane. I'm sure that does happen. I'd like to see that up on YouTube. Oh, and here's something that showed up in Panama's biggest newspaper, in Spanish, of course, so I'll do some translating here. Title is, Europeans Hiding Money and Moving It to Latin America. First stop, sometimes, Panama City. It says, at Fulmicino Airport in Rome, dogs with the Guardia de Finanza, that would be the finance guards for the Italian government, are now being trained to detect ink on currency as passengers travel through airports. Same is true with dogs being trained for airports in London, Paris, Spain, and elsewhere, where flights take off directly for Central and South America. In fact, it says French finance police, didn't even know they had them, report that 350,000 euros in cash, that'd be about 400,000 US dollars, are seized each day at the Paris airport. Man, that's a lot of croissants. Then it says, all of this has come about rather recently due to the ever-changing, more rigid laws imposed on European banks, leaving many people with previously anonymous bank accounts in places like Switzerland with no safe European haven for their money. Enter Asia and Latin America. In fact, here's a case of a French scumbag politician who caused some headlines recently because he got caught. It says, a former French ambassador and politician, ambassador to Iraq and Tunisia, with 2 degrees from prestigious universities and a French Legion of Honor medal, was stopped by financial agents at the Paris airport, arrested as one of the growing number of what they call cash commuters. As it turns out, like the United States, at borders, you must declare amounts exceeding $10,000 in the States and 10,000 euros in Europe. That would be around 12,000 US. But lately, people are taking out much larger sums of money, so they don't report it, fearing it will be seized. Officials find it stashed in luggage, cake boxes, potato chip bags, cookie tins, wheelchairs, and sometimes even in children's pockets and toys. And because the largest euro note is 500 euros, it's very easy to stash $1 million or more in a small backpack or even a shoebox. Which is why, by the way, in May of 2016, they quit producing 500 euro notes. Because European officials claim the note was too intertwined with criminal activities. Yeah, right. We've heard that about the US $100 bill, too. There's been talk of phasing that out. Hey, late breaking news. They found every criminal uses a toothbrush, so gotta ban those. By the way, to move $1 million in US $100 notes, it takes six times as much space as using 500 euro notes. So anyway, they've phased out the 500 euro note, but it's still legally in circulation, so there are a lot of them out there. But not for long, because European governments are slowly vacuuming them out of service, and they're wearing out, too. They say the average European note has a life of around 5 years. So they try to retire them before they get so old and damaged they no longer work in the condom and cigarette machines. Food for thought, huh? So, with all the new rules and regulations, Europeans are looking to hide their wealth, avoid taxes, and avoid being the object of a high-profile tax investigation case. And they have to act fast, since Swiss bankers are forcing closure of many accounts. It goes on to say, the new breed of financial, border, and airport police are routinely detaining business travelers who are on the way to foreign financial capitals, mainly in Asia and Latin America. Sometimes they're easy to spot, it says, carrying minimal luggage and behaving nervously. We see well-dressed professionals in business, insurance, and banking carrying large amounts of cash every day, says a spokesman for the Customs Revenue and Financial Police. Then he added 350,000 euros, which is around $400,000, is nothing exceptional. Every day at every European airport, large amounts of money flow through clandestinely. And there's more and more money due to the ever-changing, ever-tightening banking regulations. For decades, banking secrecy laws in Switzerland have made banks a refuge for foreigners there, successfully keeping their finances hidden from government and taxation. But Switzerland signed a treaty in October 2016 providing for automatic exchange of tax information with depositors' home countries, eliminating the last vestige of numbered accounts and autonomous, anonymous banking. At that same time, Swiss bankers warned clients to make tax declarations or risk having their Swiss accounts closed. That left many would-be tax avoiders and people with lots of money with no way to prove where it came from, with little choice but to move their money around the old-fashioned way. That would be withdrawing the cash and bringing it to a friendlier jurisdiction. So people who traditionally used anonymous Swiss bank accounts and other somewhat anonymous accounts in Europe had to make a choice, either declare bank accounts and pay high taxes on them, or hide their money. Now the 10,000 euro in cash rule, going through borders and such, was introduced in 2007. Taking a page right out of the book of U.S. customs law. It says, according to European Economic Union law, undeclared cash can be seized and held, along with a fine of 25% on the value of the cash confiscated. As a result, cash confiscations have been so lucrative, the financial police and their ink-sniffing dogs are now working European train stations too. So it says, since that Swiss ruling in 2016, cash seizures, for example, by French customs agents have soared to well over 100 million euros a quarter. It says in France alone, on an average day, French agents will seize over 300,000 euro, 50% more than back in 2011. Still, financial agents claim that they probably only catch 5% of undeclared cash crossing the country's borders. Then it says, precautions are growing more elaborate and the fines more eye-catching. For example, in February, inspectors on the fast train between Zurich and Paris stopped a Spanish traveler carrying 2 million euros, about $2.5 million, made up entirely of 500 euro notes. These bills have come to be nicknamed Bin Ladens, for their associations with money laundering and illicit transactions, so it says. Meanwhile, back in Italy, cash-sniffing dogs are helping financial police, who prowl the country's five main airports, confiscating more than $200 million a year. In fact, the National Secretary of the Italian Agents Customs Association says that much, much more cash slips through. Millions of passengers and millions of euros every week. All on its way to places like Hong Kong, Singapore, and Latin America. Saying big, famous names are being ensnared all the time, too. For example, Jerome Cahuzac, former French budget minister, Ili Hoeneß, president of the Bayern Munich soccer club in Germany, and soccer megastar Lionel Messi of Barcelona, Spain. All have been caught smuggling hundreds of thousands of euros across borders, leaving wealthy European travelers to complain that they feel like they are targets in their own countries. One European aristocrat who decided he didn't want to be named, don't blame him, said that all of his friends were sharing the same stories of Italian financial police especially boarding their docked yachts in the Mediterranean without warrants to check for undeclared cash in the safes that are on board. And if you don't open the safe or give up the combination or password, they take the safe. You know, I can almost hear those tycoons bitching now. Jeeves, did you see that? The nerve barging in like that and tracking dirt on the carpets. Let's sell this yacht and buy an island. By the way, I'm hearing more and more stories from expats and gringos now who travel back and forth from the States to Central and South America. They're telling me that people are getting stopped on the way in by U.S. Customs and TSA. And some of them have been picked at random, led into another room, and asked politely at first to initialize their computers or iPads, whatever. Now, you don't have to oblige. You can ask for a lawyer or a warrant. But then, for sure, you can kiss your connecting flight goodbye. And then some. So if you cooperate, and I suggest you do, they'll take your device into another room. And they'll come back in 20 minutes or so. So what's that all about? Well, they've just copied your hard drive, man. So far, I've heard that story from at least four different expats and gringos who just happen to be the ones selected for that little exercise, they think, randomly. Could be, though, the way they looked, walked, acted, or the substance of the answer they gave when they were asked why they were in Latin America and what were they doing there. Now, occasionally, you'll get asked that question as the government immigration slug flips through your passport pages and sees you've been someplace other than one of the usual suspect Latin American tourist destinations, Costa Rica, Mexico, Panama, Ecuador, or Belize. So where you travel in Latin America could pop a red flag at U.S. immigration upon your return, depending on your answers and if the immigration slug's hemorrhoids are acting up again. And you know, when I hear firsthand stories like that about the U.S., I can hardly believe it was the country I grew up in. When I was a kid, we were always told that the police states were the Soviet Union in the Eastern Bloc countries. But I digress as usual. Anyway, this article concludes by saying, the bulk of the seized cash in Spain, for example, includes euros and American dollars on their way mostly to Latin America. Increasingly, it says, intermediaries, that would be mules or mulas in Spanish, are being used to move money across borders. According to this spokesman, we don't care about his name, he represents Spain's National Tax Agency. He says authorities are breaking up money transportation rings all the time. One of their favorite methods being using fake or real import-export companies smuggling cash out of Spain by train, car, and container ships hidden in with legitimate merchandise. At least, it says, people caught moving undeclared amounts of money are dealt with more discreetly than they would be in the U.S. They have private judicial proceedings and are almost always fined rather than imprisoned. All right, so money is fleeing Europe. A nice, expensive place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. And it looks like a lot of wealthy Europeans are on the very same page. All right, now from the crypto department, there's more crazy-ass news coming out of Venezuela. Turns out they've outlawed all cryptocurrencies except one that the government just created. The name of this crypto? Petrol. Short, of course, for petroleum. About all Venezuela's got left. Though it's all in the ground because they're barely producing. Why? Well, the refineries are broken down pieces of junk because of lack of maintenance. Surprise, surprise. Now, the interesting thing about this report is that lardbag, leisure suit-wearing Madero, you know, the guy with the rotten retro fashion sense? Man, don't you dig those lime green and yellow leisure suits? Now, according to press releases, you can believe there are press releases, he's recruited hundreds of thousands of school kids as this new petro cryptocurrency mining group. So the plan is to have high school kids mining this stuff with their computers. The only thing is that most kids don't have computers, and the ones that do don't have electricity. So good luck with that, huh? Sure, the electric power is so subsidized it's almost free, but with 4 to 8 hours a day of outages, well, that's not good for crypto mining. Meanwhile, Venezuela's private business sector, who've been using Bitcoin and other cryptos all along, even though they're illegal, are total non-believers in this latest socialist-style crypto experiment. Talk about ironies, huh? Crypto is supposed to be highly decentralized, which is one of its true strengths, yet in this case, it's highly centralized in a failed state yet. Anyway, members of Venezuela's private business sector have been quoted in the newspaper and blog El Impulse, asserting that successful cryptocurrency world markets are not managed by governments. And its credibility and successes are based on trust, something that does not exist in Venezuela, with no names attached to that quote. I wonder why. It says, in order to start mining the new petro cryptocurrency, the government says you'll have to sign up with the new registry of cryptocurrency. You'll have to supply your national ID number. You'll sign up on an internet portal. Where it says in Spanish, of course, registration is an essential legal requirement to mine and use petro. In addition, it says you must use this registry to have access to other digital currencies that may be authorized by the government. Other cryptocurrencies, it says. It also says by registering on the website, you'll be able to acquire other cryptocurrencies for free use and demand in Venezuela. So what it looks like is by signing up on this site, you're actually incriminating yourself. And if you hit the checklist for other cryptocurrencies, they're all illegal, so you've just broadcasted your intentions. So then, who's going to sign up? By the way, guess what happened just a couple of days ago? The website got hacked.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.